Good morning and welcome to the Friday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 15th day of May 2020. And yes, my name is Peter Wickham. Surprise, surprise, I'm in for Mr. David Ellis today. And happy to have the opportunity to commune with you in as much as I was not able to do so on Tuesday. So I'm happy to be here on a Friday. Fridays tend to be a little slow on this program, but we're going to pick up the pace today for sure. I can promise you it will not be a slow Friday once I'm here. So I'm happy to be in with you until 2 p.m. Mr. Dennis Johnson, he is your producer this morning. You heard him during the course of the week. So he is in the producer's chair today, and he will ensure that things technical go well and that we don't have any reason to do a lot of cutting, hopefully. So let's make sure that we keep on the right side while we have our conversation. The call number is 434-1790. You can also email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. I prefer you use my regular email. And you can also use the WhatsApp 266-IEVOB. All those facilities are working. All the lines are ready full. So I just have to say a few brief words. Well, between Tuesday and now, we've had the dissolution of Parliament in St. Kitts and Nevis. 2 days early, or 2 days before Parliament would have dissolved itself. Those of you who know me know my views on late elections. We have a COVID election here, however, and I think that's probably the more interesting part now. So the Prime Minister in St. Kitts has dissolved Parliament, and he will probably be the first government in the region and probably one of the first in the world to have to hold an election or call an election under the pandemic guidelines. It's going to be interesting. St. Kitts and Nevis is a peculiar place. The population of St. Kitts and Nevis is somewhere in the vicinity of 47,000, if I remember correctly. The interesting thing, however, is that there are 46,000 people on the voter register, and there are only 34,000 people who are over the age of 18. So technically speaking, there are only 34,000 people who are eligible to vote based on their last census, but they have some 46,000 people on the voter register. This is extremely bloated. And of course, when I hear people in other countries talking about bloated lists, I'm somewhat amused, because the reality of what is going on in Dominica, in St. Kitts and Nevis, is no different. St. Kitts, however, has 12,000 persons who are voters that are not resident overseas. I'm intimately aware of their arrangements in St. Kitts because I was one of the consultants that worked on their electoral reform. They have an interesting attitude towards non-resident voters in that you can declare yourself a person who is not resident and still eligible to vote, which is the reason why they can identify a statistic called a non-resident voter, because somewhere in their electoral record they would have an address saying, I am domiciled in St. Kitts and Nevis, but I actually live in Brooklyn, New York. Odd as it may be, it is consistent with the laws that are in existence in St. Kitts and Nevis, and until those laws are changed, that's the way it will be. The challenge in this post-COVID era, though, is I am challenged to understand how these 12,000 people are going to be able to vote. In the last election, the former Prime Minister bragged about the fact that he brought in over 20 charters. He cannot do so on this occasion, and my sense is that this incredibly weakens his hand, and it incredibly strengthens the hand of the Team Unity leadership. Having said that, however, we have to see how it materializes, because both leaders are very anxious and feel very buoyed about their capacity. The other thing that is going to be interesting is to see how we have campaigning in this environment. It will be a social media election. It cannot be an election where people get out and press the flesh. Elections in St. Kitts tend to be expensive, because persons are expected to be on the road, supposed to deliver goodies. St. Kitts and Nevis always has the best election parties. So in the past, they have had what was equivalent to a mini music festival in the form of election rallies. And David Thompson always used to say to me that it is probably cheaper to buy a ticket and go to St. Kitts and to see all of these artists perform at an election rally for free than to pay money and go to the St. Lucia Music Festival, which was at the time the premier music festival of that day. So the likes of Buju Banton and Barris Hammond and all of these people have performed in St. Kitts and Nevis. There will be none of that this year. So it will mean the election will probably be a lot cheaper. And the question is, how will that money be spent? So that's my regional perspective. A little bit concerned on the local front, the spat that we had with our local doctors. I'm happy to offer reflections on that during the course of today's proceedings. But I am particularly concerned about the fact that I have heard nothing from insurance companies in Barbados. We have just passed through a period of about 4 to 6 weeks where we would have had reduced traffic movement. The insurance companies have been very silent on the extent to which any of us are going to benefit from a reduced premium. And I note that many of the American insurance companies have already done so. However, the insurance companies here have not done a lot to ease the pressure that has been brought to bear on us. When I say that, I am acutely aware of the maxi taxis, minibuses, especially the Z vans, which generally make nuisances in themselves, but that's a conversation for another time. Are they not entitled, having put their vehicles down for a couple of weeks in many instances, are they not entitled also to some kind of an insurance rebate? And I do feel that the insurance company's silence has been deafening, and sadly so in this pandemic. We've had easing of the restrictions. This is certainly welcome. I look forward to the easing of restriction as it relates to the gym. This is a personal matter largely, because that's how I take my exercise, and I look forward to gyms being reopened. However, I'm patient. I'm not suggesting that it is anything that needs to be rushed. When the authorities believe it's time, then we will have that time. But nonetheless, all the other regulations are, you know, something that we are welcoming, and we are happy that we're moving in the right direction. The long-term pain of this is going to be significant, and I believe that as we begin to put our lives back together, we will realize what a devastating impact this thing will have, especially as it relates to the tourism sector. And that said, I received a long, rambling email this morning from someone who was essentially suggesting that we need to just get out of tourism and move into sea island cotton production, move into agriculture, just shift the economy. I've told people who have come with this argument that it is not a light switch. You can just switch on or switch off. The excellence of tourism in Barbados has been built over decades, and one could argue even generations, where we have a fairly sophisticated tourism plan in this country. The idea of retooling that plan and moving it away from tourism and saying we're going to do sea island cotton production and we're going to do agriculture, that is going to be the basis for our tourism, is something that I have some challenges with. And that was my main concern when I read the letter, that the belief in the minds of many is that you can just flip a switch and say, okay, our economy is now agrarian effective tomorrow. But it doesn't work that way. What is going to happen to all of the training and investment, considerable investment that has gone into tourism? Are we supposed to stop the Marriott project? Are we supposed to stop the Four Seasons project? Do we just pack up and say, okay, we're going to plow up those buildings and plant crops? You know, it's something that is a bit short-sighted. And I think that people who express these views also have to appreciate that you have to essentially work with what is available to you. And for many decades, what has been available to us in abundance is a tourism resource that we have invested in and we have exploited. Turning our backs on that will not be something that we can do easily. And certainly there may be the need for a considerable amount of diversification. But, you know, let's not jump headlong into this view that we can just flip a switch and become agrarian tomorrow. Concerned about the kites, there's no way to say it differently that the kites are a problem. They continue to be a problem. They're a problem in my area. They're a problem, I understand, in the Bayland area. And I don't know what will stop adult men specifically from believing that this is something that they ought to do. But the noise pollution and the noise is becoming unbearable to many, and people are complaining, and I really do hope that something can be done. This is Down to Brass Tacks, 434-1790. Good morning and welcome to the first caller.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, good morning. Morning, Glenn. How are you doing?
How are you doing there?
Not too bad.
Good. Before we get into my main subject, Several months ago, he mentioned that one way of seeking to deal with the kite issue might be to use drones to identify where they are, to identify where they actually occur. It's very difficult from stand looking to know exactly where to pinpoint the exact source of the kite that's taken out, that's tied out. And maybe with the use of, the police could incorporate the use of drones to help them pinpoint the actual location, and that if that is passed on, then they can go they'd be better equipped to nail the culprits down and then seek to deal with them where they can. But to just say a kite in there, I don't know if it isn't productive. And maybe we can put the drones to as an idea to identify the kite.
Yeah, I don't have a difficulty with that, Glenn, but my problem is that I just think this is a problem that's so easily solved, and I think it is a question where you have to ask yourself why would people feel that that's something that they should do? So you are now having to deploy expensive technology to hunt down somebody who's flying a kite, when hopefully the person's mother or father should be able to tell them just don't do it at night. Anyhow, but that's my thing. But I don't have a problem with the drone thing.
I like to talk this morning on the premises meeting with the press yesterday afternoon. I don't know if you listened to it or watched it or whatever. But I found a good lot of useful information came out of it.
Okay.
But what struck me most was something that was not touched upon at all, and which to me was the hottest topic of the past week or so. It was not touched upon by the journalist when the Prime Minister did not vote safety information or touch the subject. Okay? So it went a begging, and it has to do with the hot topic of the situation with Dale Marshall as Attorney General. As you know, there's been some criticism of his handling of the issue, and how he tried to rationalize it, etc. That's been the hot topic. But I thought that, and there was even a call from the Democratic Labour Party and other people for Donald Marshall's dismissal or resignation. I thought that the journalists would have asked the Prime Minister, where do you stand? How do you react to this call by the MP leader to dismiss Dale Marshall, Attorney General Marshall? And then where do you stand? Are you standing, and depending on the answer, you could ask, Are you standing fully behind Mr. Marshall? Are you giving your full support? What is the situation with Mr. Marshall in your books as Prime Minister who would have appointed him? I thought that is something, given what has been, all the talk has been in the committee, would have been a time to get the Prime Minister at that point, when the controversy had decided to talk about it and to say, give her feelings on Dr. Marshall's, Dale Marshall, A.G. Marshall's performance and current situation. I also was disappointed that where that whole thing is concerned, we've had comments from people, including myself, who is not a lawyer, who is not a legal scholar, and other people who've commented, you have political, direct political comments. But I thought the country would be better served if we had had comments from people who are schooled in that field, who are schooled in the law, who are schooled in constitutional, etc., and come and help guide the public, help the public understand the nuances of the situation, pro or for or both. So you better appreciate that.
What's your view on the situation, Glenn?
I felt he handled it badly. I felt that it was handled badly from the very beginning.
Right, but then that's probably what you needed to call and say, because if the Prime Minister had issues with Marshall, my presumption is that he would no longer be a minister. So that to me.
How do you discover when?
But you are a minister in her government if you enjoy her confidence. If you don't enjoy her confidence, then you're not a minister in her government.
Right, you're saying the press
that it was not. Anyhow, no problem. So I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying that in terms of your utilizing the time this morning more productively, I feel it's more important that you express your own view on the matter.
I already expect that. Why we're not rehashing my own view?
Okay, alright, fair enough.
No, I won't blame you if you didn't hear it, but that's why I did not go on to that.
Okay.
But what I really want to deal with, Brian, really, is that I was saying that I would have loved, I would prefer, I think I would benefit by it, to hear other voices, informed voices, come and make a contribution to it, the situation, their reading of the situation.
They, but Glenn, what informed voices can tell you somebody can tell you that it's right? You would like to hear somebody tell you that it's right or explain why it was done?
I'm not on right or wrong. Put it in context. Go back to the law, the original law, the Police Service Act, the establishment of the post, and come through the process so we know whether there was any mishandling on the cause or mishandling or not. That's all.
But I see the situation as fairly straightforward, right? Clearly, there's no provision for the establishment of the post. Clearly, there was a feeling that there should have been. And clearly, the decision to appoint was taken before the decision to change the regulations. I don't see that there's no rocket science. The presumption that you should go ahead and appoint someone without having the necessary legislation in place, I think that really is the fundamental issue that we have to ask ourselves about. And I don't know that anybody can say that this is the right thing to do.
And the other question, what should be the fate of anyone who would have...
Well, I mean, that's another conversation. But I'm saying that it is clear to me, based on more recent history, that this is the type of thing that governments do. Now, one could argue that there's a difference between the executive chairman of the Barbados Water Authority and the one of the deputy commissioners of police. I mean, there's some arguments even that what you need to do in police force is to appoint an HR officer who is not necessarily in uniform. But that's another conversation altogether. My sense is that governments clearly do this type of thing from time to time. Governments also decide on who they want and then change the rules to fit that. And that has also happened in fairly recent times. The question as to whether or not this is a good thing or whether this is not the type of thing that we should do, and for me, is an easy question to answer. And I don't really know that we need to go the route of saying, okay, let's get an informed person to tell us about the context and whatnot. Clearly, it was not something that they should do. Clearly, it's not good enough. Clearly, it is not reflecting the best traditions of governance. So they dropped the ball. The question is this...
And therefore, what should happen next?
Well, I mean, I would assume that is a different type of conversation. You're asking whether you believe the minister should have been dismissed for that?
No, I'm saying the press should have raised those issues at the press conference yesterday.
Well, my thing is that the dismissal of the minister clearly is not on the table, because if the dismissal of the minister was on the table, we would have heard about it. My assumption is the prime minister knew. You don't think she knew?
I can't presume to know what the prime minister knows.
Well, but she must have known.
But I'm not in any position to know what she knows or not. No, but the point is, I think that you might not have been, but I would like to hear another voice on it.
No, no problem. That's fine. But I am happy that I've heard your voice on it, though. And I'm also happy that I've been given the opportunity to express my own view on it. So for me, is an easy question to answer. And as I said, I think this type of thing should not happen in government. Sadly, it happens all too frequently in government. And it's not a question of me justifying it one way or the other. I think it is not reflecting the finer traditions of good governance. And for me, it's an easy question to answer. Right? Anyhow, Glenn, we're going to have to run. Thanks a lot for calling. It was good chatting with you. Down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Hello, morning, Peter.
Morning, ma'am. How are you doing there?
I'm surprised to hear you today.
Okay. Yeah, me too. I was surprised to be out here.
You was on TV?
I was on Tuesday, though. Dennis gave me a reprieve this morning.
That is great.
Yeah.
I don't want to prolong the talk, but if the commissioner, deputy commissioner, had too much on his plate and needed help, I didn't see anything wrong with it, but maybe the title that was given, see?
No. There are many organizations in which they have several deputies.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an unusual thing, and it's not unusual to have a deputy dealing with personnel, a deputy dealing with strategic management. You know, some of them even have a deputy dealing with counter narcotics. So the idea of having more than one deputy is not problematic. And I don't think that any of us are challenging the necessity of having a second deputy dealing with those kinds of issues specifically. The Barbados Police Force has one of the largest human resource components in government. The Queen Elizabeth Hospital is higher. And for far too long in those organizations, we believe that a person who is the commanding officer, like a commissioner, should be able to manage those people as opposed to having someone that has a specific HR function and focus and HR skills. And I think that that's really what we're speaking to. So there's no question as to the need. I think the issue really for persons like myself is the manner in which it was done.
Okay.
That really is it.
At least you're upfront with that.
Yeah, well, I try to be upfront with everything, dude.
Yeah, that is very good because I don't know how people can be like a member of one party and it's like they can't do no wrong. I don't mean this particular party, but some people, like, they love somebody and they can't do no wrong. And they don't really see that as love because you should let the person know, you know, in certain terms, you care for them, you love them, but, you know, what you're doing is not correct.
Yeah,
and that
be,
is more help
them. I appreciate your point, ma'am. Yeah.
Are you really called about is Professor Hillary, his statement a couple of days ago that the COVID-19 situation is going to be devastating to the Caribbean. And what I would like the gentleman to get into or to help with is not only bring these statements, but what is UWE doing across the Caribbean? What I think we should have been into agriculture and everything like yesterday, especially since COVID. Do you know that one of the African countries, I can't remember if it's Ghana or which, but one of them, that they get rice from Brazil? You don't think that that is ridiculous? I mean, like, what is really going on? Where Africa can supply everything in this world for human beings to eat, and they have to wait on Brazil to get rice. So, I mean, so much things are so... So we need to get to, as I said like yesterday, into our agriculture, because even in the United States, meat, there's a shortage of meat. I don't know if people are watching and saying what is going on.
So there's a shortage, there's a glut.
Of meat, there's a shortage.
There's a glut.
A glut of milk.
No, there's a glut of meat.
And not in certain places.
Farmers are destroying pigs in abundance because they have no market for the product. So there's a shortage, there's a glut of meat, not a shortage.
Okay, there's two ways to look at this thing. Mm-hmm. You know when business people are losing,
right?
They throw away, I understand that, right? They throw away, say, and then they can claim insurance on it.
It's not about that. Ma'am, it's a simple situation. The processing plants, some of them have closed, and as a result, when pigs go to market, normally they are processed thereafter because y'all like to eat them in different ways.
No, I don't eat pork, but there are some...
Good for you, ma'am.
...other kind of meat and different things that there's a shortage in certain areas. And
there's no shortages, ma'am. There's no shortages. I'm telling you, I'm saying there's no shortage here in Barbados either.
Because the pigs give away. My thing is to say that if we cannot supply ourselves with our same meat and food and potatoes and yams and eddies and all those things, as this thing go on, it could go on for 2 years, whatever, it could go on forever, we need to put some money into agriculture and get planting all in now.
All right.
The hotels. I'll finish now. The hotel situation, yes, we need to hold on to that, but we need a balance. Not just hotels, we need a balance. And I think if we could get this, our country up and running, and I don't think about Barbados, I think about the West Indies, that this is still a place that is looked towards the tourists to visit, right? So we have to have a future in tourism, but not just tourism.
Ma'am, you're aware that the University of the West Indies has an entire faculty of agriculture in Port of Spain, Trinidad? Oh, you're gone, sorry. No, I was just making the point that the Faculty of Agriculture is one of the longest standing institutions in the University of the West Indies, and the Faculty of Agriculture has made an outstanding contribution to agriculture recently. The question that we need to ask is how many Barbadians go and study agricultural science in St. Augustine? It's not a whole lot. The more popular disciplines at the University of the West Indies would be medicine, engineering, disciplines like that where people feel they can make a good living. The challenge with agriculture is not UWA's inability to produce courses that help the issue along. The problem is basically that people are not interested in it, and that's the challenge that we continue to face. So, I don't know. I am I am concerned, I continue to be concerned about our issue with agriculture in the Caribbean, but as I say, you know, we need to move in that direction, but unfortunately we can't flip a switch. There has to be something basic to this, and it has to be human interest. And until there's human interest in it, we're basically not going to go anywhere. Down to Brass Tacks, remember we're on 434-1790. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Wickham.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Not bad. Yeah. A couple of things here. If the Democratic Left Party was in power and did what Mr. Marshall had done, you will not hear the word of it on this radio station, including yourself being critical of...
But what you just said...
I didn't hear what you said.
But you weren't listening?
I was trying to...
When I just spoke to Glenn, what did they just say?
But let me go on now. Have you said...
No, I mean, I don't have a problem with you taking the position you're taking. But you just listened to Glenn calling and saying that he had a problem with it.
I only heard you coming on to the last...
Well,
last,
that's the problem. You should be listening from the beginning. From the time 10 o'clock comes, switch over and don't move until 2.
I understand you. But let me go on to say.
It is unfair for you to say that I have not been critical of the move, because that is exactly what I just said. I said, in my opinion, it is not consistent with the finer traditions of good governance.
Okay, well, I apologize.
It is not good enough.
Good, I apologize.
But yes,
on the other hand, I still maintain the point that if the Democratic Labour Party was the government, the Barbados Labour Party supporters would be calling here, so, and it would be critical of the decision taken by the Attorney General at that time, and they would find no excuse of what they don't want him fired, even making the suggestion giving statement that the issue will be removed.
Who said the same wrong with Verla calling and saying that?
Some callers to this program to find it annoying.
I think what they are saying is that they don't believe it should happen. But I don't think anybody have a problem with Verla. But Verla's job is to call in and say that, is to express those views.
But my thing is that this government, this particular government, which you like,
when you let these nasty remarks of which I like, where that come from?
Okay.
This particular government, full stop. You got to be joking in this thing, but I like.
But I find that there
are... I didn't like the other one too.
But I find that this one is very untidy, and everything is set up to do the harvest stuff.
But you can't, you know why I got a problem with you saying that? Because you forget, right, that under the Democratic Labour Party, you had a similar thing that went on. And you know the funny thing about it is that Ernie Walters was up at Water Authority for a whole 6 years, and the boy didn't say nothing. How long was he up there in a post that did not exist?
But anybody could have criticized it.
No, but the point of the matter is that you cannot say that under the Democratic Labour Party regime, you would have heard no end of it. Because it happened for a long time, and you heard none of it. This issue about the post not being created, I only heard about that after the government changed, and they sent somebody else to occupy the post.
But I heard Mr. Frank Caswell talking about that for a little while.
I never heard Caswell's illustrious voice on this issue of the Water Authority.
I'll talk about the change that this government will have done.
So, all I'm saying to you is, I appreciate you're coming from. You do not like it. That's fine. You believe that people should criticize it as much as possible, and that's fine too.
You don't have to.
But what I am saying is that you cannot say, in fairness, that the Barbados Labour Party has a bad habit of doing things that the Democratic Labour Party did not do, which is untrue, because the Democratic Labour Party did the same thing too, which is not a justification in my opinion. But I'm saying, if we're going to be fair, we got to say, look, the Democratic Labour Party, the Barbados Labour Party changed laws to appoint people. The Democratic Labour Party changed the law to appoint people too. The Barbados Labour Party allowed people to be appointed to posts that did not exist. The Democratic Labour Party did the same thing too.
Yeah, but two wrongs don't make a right.
I ain't saying so. I'm saying that there's both wrong. And that was consistent with my view that I expressed in the beginning. Both of them leave a lot to be desired, in my opinion. Having said that, however, you cannot argue that what the Barbados Labour Party is doing is not anything that nobody hasn't done before, because it's entirely untrue to say that.
Yeah, the other thing too, last night we were listening to it online on VOB online.
You agree with me? That's what you're saying?
Yes, okay. I disagree.
Whoa.
The other thing is, we're listening online, when it was coming too close with the chats, the press is adding questions. I was amazed that they didn't bring this one about crime. Again, crime is showing itself great in Barbados. I didn't notice that the journalists, I don't know for one reason or the other, whenever they have a press conference, they seems not to want to mention anything about crime. I don't know if it taps the sugar off something, or if it does something to them. I don't know why, but I think that the journalists need to get on top of the game now. They're too far down below. And my last point, Peter Wickham, the last time I spoke to you, actually for Royal, went off. We were discussing the Bernard de Pisa and the Democratic Party and the advice that you would advise the what the Democratic Party should do or what they should not do, but they yet to start to get all these seats in order, put up these representatives, etc., etc. My thing to you, when have you had any words with the president of the Democratic Party to know what is fully going on though, without expounding on this radio station?
The only words I've had with her are words that I've had with her publicly in the studio, where I have expressed views and so on, and she's often disagreed. Any advice I give to her is given publicly. The last conversation I had with her was I wanted to check up some information regarding the gentleman that died, the stalwart, and she responded. But our conversations are usually light,
nothing heavy. Yeah, I see.
You have a problem with my advice?
No, I have no problem at all with your advice. You can get somebody advice, that don't mean anybody necessarily.
Precisely.
Yield to your advice.
Right, and I ain't no problem with that.
Because we already see your ground.
That ain't a problem. So you have a difficulty, though, with the advice I've been given?
No, I don't have a difficulty.
If it is bad advice?
No. Somebody they can live with it. Because in order now to look at these seats, I take your advice. It was a good one, St. John, St. Philip North. I like that advice.
Mm-hmm.
But therefore, there's more that I am looking at too, and I am looking with two eyes at it, and that's the Michael Central. There are too many complaints about that constituency.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, what are they complaining about?
The representative. Mm-hmm. They don't see him, the constitution office, that door be open. They don't know if he still exists. And
they don't know if he still exists? Anything. We you thought he did dead?
and the young boy is still looking for jobs.
Yeah, a lot of people in Barbados looking for jobs now, so that part is nothing that, you know.
I still feel that the Democratic Labour Party, they might not win the next election, but they could get looking at least about 8 or 9 seats they could get.
Whoa, that's a big haul. I had a conversation on that with someone this week. A Barbados Labour Party supporter, a strong Barbados Labour Party supporter, and he was questioning my rush to judgment regarding the next election. And he said he thought it was too soon for me to be saying that I felt that they would have difficulty winning those 3 seats or would be able to win only those 3 seats. His views were consistent with yours. Because he also felt that St. Michael Central was under some pressure, and he also felt that 7 or 8 seats was more likely.
That's right.
My thing is that what I am telling you guys is not that I know that this will be the outcome. Mm. I'm saying that looking at the data as it stands, all things being equal, which is a typical economics term that I learned from Wendell McLean, the likelihood of getting more than 3 seats is very low at this time. Now, things could change. When I go into the field and I start to do my polling, then I will be able to give an up-to-date sense of what the reality on the ground is at any particular point in time. But if I just take the data, the statistical data, I'm saying to you that the swing required to get anything more than the 3 seats that we have talked about will be abnormally high and inconsistent with what is likely to happen, even in an election year that is post-landslide. Because if you think about it, we have landslide year, which is 86 and then 91. That was the landslide year. We have, a post-landslide election year. And then we have after 91 with the 03, the post-landslide election year in 03. If you look at those 2 years and you look at also data from the other islands where we've studied landslides, like in Grenada and also in St. Lucia, the level of recovery swing that you are likely to see is not going to bear fruit in terms of a large number of seats. So while what you're saying is not unreasonable, it doesn't sit with the data that I have seen at this point in time. However, poll data could convince me otherwise. I mean, a guy could be a particularly bad representative. I don't know whether that's the case in St. Michael Centric. I don't know anything about the gentleman other than that he is a good speaker. You don't think he's a good speaker?
I don't listen to him, so I don't know.
No, I'm talking about Speaker of the House.
Oh, you're a Speaker of the House. Yes, you are.
You would like the Dems to get 8 seats?
I don't feel that we get much more than that.
But you would like them to get 8 seats?
It doesn't matter, because I know they can't win. But I tell you, I don't feel that they get
But you would be glad if they got 8 seats?
You've got to start somewhere.
Well, you start at zero.
Yeah, of course. Although I tell something, this St. Michael Central seat St. Michael West, sorry, is a funny old game. There's a young lady now who she's running for one of the small parties.
You back with her again?
No, she's starting her campaign already.
But you back with her again? You back with the small party again?
Of course, I like your small party. She's campaigning.
But based on what you saw in the last election, you are still convinced that these small parties can impact?
Anyway, I don't know. You've got to try. Like you said,
but you had this conversation with me before, and you were determined that this would be the time we would see these small parties coming up, because the Barbados Labour Party was a divided institution, and the small parties, all of that you talked about, and look at what happened.
And we don't know what's going to happen in the future. Look, I can't predict that. But
when you even get Natalie a little something?
When Natalie coming back again?
She is?
Of course.
She tell you so?
Yes. Natalie's coming back again for the city.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, sir. I enjoy my conversations with you. I really do look forward to chatting with you. So we'll see. You just gave me a piece of information that excites me, that Natalie is returning to contest the city in 2023. Yeah, something to look forward to. Donna Brastax, good morning. Good morning and welcome. 434-1790, you're on the air. Good morning and welcome.
Hello?
Yes, good morning.
Morning, sir. How are you?
I'm not too bad. And yourself?
Well, I just say hanging after hearing a great speech from my Prime Minister.
Okay.
You know? I got 3 points. Tell me something. You know the criteria of the, can't remember the name. Save your foreign ministry. The welfare.
Well, the criteria for what?
The welfare of visiting people homes.
I don't know. Visiting them for what?
In terms of benefit.
You basically want to know how you can get, what, some assistance from ministry?
Yeah.
I don't know what criteria is used.
Okay, all right. Let me give you lots of points. I spoke to a young lady, and she haven't said that. She haven't seen a welfare officer. But she tell her that the only time she can visit her now is in 6 months. But with this COVID, you cannot visit one person in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? I mean, she have kids and little needs, and she have to see nobody ever come to her home.
She's getting anything, though?
But she's not getting nothing, no. She's not getting anything.
The only way she can get something is if somebody comes to her.
Yeah, they won't say, but it's in 6 months.
Well, has she called the social assistance line?
She's been calling, and ain't getting through. She's been calling, ain't getting through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but, you know, I lend my assistance. But something needs to be done there in terms of that six-month thing. I don't feel that person should be able to wait for 6 months. 6 months, to me, it seems is a long time.
But there's a number, I'm trying to find it here now, but there's a number that she can call if she needs urgent assistance.
Okay, well, you give me that off here.
I can give you it on air too. Hold on a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you were something else you wanted to say?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
My next point, I was thinking in terms of the Prime Minister.
Right. Take down this number, 535.
Hold on.
5366.
5366. Okay.
Right. If she calls that number and expresses, essentially that is the number for people who are in immediate need. In other words, people who are facing starvation or some other perilous situation, and assistance can be given. Even if no one answers the number, someone will call her back in due course.
Okay. All right, my next point. Go on, my next point. I listened to Prime Minister carefully last night, right?
As you should.
What she do, what other things she open up, even in terms of those little barber shops, those little smaller mini restaurants, drive away and take away, in terms of the beach and all that. But Peter Wickham, my Prime Minister cannot handle all of this national insurance. You know, all these people that are not going to work, nothing. You know how many money we call national insurance?
My, brutal.
Huh?
It's brutal.
It will call my Prime Minister a lot. And right now, at this moment, we don't need to hurt her head. Huh? We do not need to hurt her head.
So what do you think we should do?
Well, at this moment, we sit down, listen to her. And we'll she probably some people go back to work. I said, the business will come back in out the national insurance to the Fed want to put people and do the big opening now, when everybody about her work now, that she will relax. With them. That whole policy.
Who has too much power?
In terms of poor people. I think in terms of voting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. A lot of poor people is voting now. Huh?
No, but there's no question about that. So what's the bigger point?
But what I'm saying, a lot of populist vote, and my Prime Minister can't afford to lose the election, the next election. I mean, she got clear that she's going to win. You understand?
But what?
She loves her poor people.
Right.
So that way she opened up the little piece bit by bit, because she loves her poor people. So those who want fret and say she do this and that there, tell her relax, that everything will be well.
I think everything will be well, too. I believe we are in good hands. Yeah. Which is fine. All right, sir. Thanks a lot for calling, sir. Peter, despite your obstinacy and bias against the pig, there is a glut of meat in some areas. The woman is correct. Stop trying to stop people trying to eat pork. Whether you like it or not, Bajans are pork mouse. Despite your obstinacy and bias against pigs, there is a glut of meat in some areas. I thought he was saying that there was a glut of meat in some areas. So I don't understand what this gentleman is suggesting, or lady, that this comment has to do with my problem with pigs. I have a problem with pigs. But the point is that it seems as though there are too few people now who have the problem that I have, because there are pigs going and begging, both in Barbados and in the United States. In the United States, they're shooting them and destroying the pigs and burying the carcasses because there's just too much pork. She was saying that there is a shortage. There's no shortage, not to the best of my knowledge. So I don't understand what it is. People just get upset when they hear me talking about pigs. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Hi, good.
This is Mr. P?
Yeah, pig.
Okay. I know you're not a pork moat yourself.
There should be a pig.
Yeah, I agree with you. We should try and make them extinct.
Monkeys, go after the pig.
Yeah.
You cannot live a healthy life and eating
pigs
that day.
Yeah.
And all the fat and all
the swain.
And all the foolishness.
No, the swain is an evil thing. That's the best thing that the Bible said, laugh out the pigs.
But you know what I'm saying, though?
Yes, sir.
You gravitate toward the Bible for what I want to gravitate.
But me too.
There's a talk about that.
But it's a useful book when it comes to dealing with pigs. Because it is unmistakably against the consumption of pigs.
Now, I got to talk about this before I get
to that. So, Mr. P, you were always a Rasta. You were always vegetarian?
No.
So, you used to eat pig in your time?
I ate swine when I was growing up.
Okay, you had pig foot souls and thing.
But, you know, as I always said, it's about learning.
Yeah, true.
Talking about it, some people don't learn.
So when I was a child, I sport like a child. When I became a man, I put away childish things.
Right.
Pork being one.
I got a brother that never eat meat in his life.
Okay.
Never, to this day. There was a caller yesterday to the program that Dennis was posting. If I send me to the contacts, he can correct me. This is reference to Ross Gilroy. A time John Stott was producing the program, and he told me he had a number for me to call a lady that lived in the area about that same road.
Mm-hmm.
This is months ago. Having made the call, I called NTW, and I explained in detail everything about that lady. I was assured that that problem would have been corrected. I am more surprised for that, but I don't know. It is not the lady that whose number was given to me. The lady called the program yesterday and complained about that same situation. I want to tell politicians, right, all of them, whether they or be, getting clients to patronize your business is hard. But you know what is even harder? Keeping them. A lot of some people, may they start a business to give you the best. And as the get firmer and firmer, more rooted, you get all fish cakes with the beer smell. You don't get the fish no more. But people have a choice. And one of the choices are, you don't have to patronize your business anymore. And I speak in terms that anybody can understand. Another caller who spoke about NIS and his making contributions. I remember I went in a fast food restaurant and I ordered a burger, not a pork burger or a hamburger. And when I was given this burger, it did not compare to what I saw on the advertising board. And they tell the straight, I don't want that. Or you can get back in my nation. No, I didn't come in here, spend money to get back. I want what advertised on the board. I'm not going to go call the police on me. Because I am not leaving until I get what is there. You know, there's something called false advertising. Barbadians have to learn to stand up for the right. We are governed by laws of the land, and as far as my knowledge serves me, no government institution is exempt. If I'm wrong about that, I can be corrected. But we allow people to get rid of law nonsense, and we don't challenge it. And what the man said yesterday was last night was correct. The way national insurance put all this thing, it sounds like an ad. And it's sad that you are making contributions that then the time comes for you to gain from the contributions that you are made. You are then told. You are not told when you go and you sign up. You are told after the fact, which is wrong. And to the historian who called yesterday said that he will protest against certain happenings. As you get permission from the commissioner of police, you rest assured they can come and support you. No, about politics. Both of these two major parties are guilty. Both. And, you know, I would think that when you get the opportunity to correct things, you will correct them. In certain cases, it become worse. Right? And I call it using people, and they don't like it. That's why I say, see these two major parties? I had nothing to do with each one of them. Nothing. Not me. They only know what is wrong when they are looking to get in there. Both of them are guilty. So your caller who always represented the Democrat, what you said about the executive chairman of Water Authority, that's a fact. So how come you didn't criticize it then? But no, some voice is doing the same thing at a different location. You're becoming critical of it. I
detest that. Okay. All right, Mr. Pete, thank you for calling. Down to brass tacks. Any comment of port always brings out the best in people. So we have some WhatsApp messages. Peter, there is a glut of beef and other meats on the market, and that's what the lady said. Why did you jump on the pig? The Bible speaks of cloven feet animals. The bias against pigs was for another reason, health reasons. In those days, and today too, a parasitic illness called trichinosis is the reason. It has nothing to do with the meat itself. There is absolutely nothing wrong with pork. Another WhatsApper, my good friend George Griffith, says, Peter, a friend told me that you hate pigs. That, like you, he hates pigs. And he hates them so much that he will eat as much pork as he can until they... And I am committed to lending him a hand. And my other good friend, Patrick Peewee. I believe it is Peewee. Yes, it is Peewee. Patrick Peewee Eswick. He says that I need to read the Bible properly. Against the pigs is the Old Testament, and that was specifically for Jews. The Bible speaks to not calling anything created being defiled. It's always to hear you funny talk about pigs and biblical matters on and off the air. So as a caller said to me some years ago, reference to the pig in the Bible is specific reference to Jews. It has nothing to do with the rest of us. So those instructions are for the Jews. So the rest of us are supposed to be able to eat pork. Picking and choosing as we go along. There are no